Okay, let us start. Thanks everybody for coming. This is our first Hellenic Observatory seminar of the term, and I think it's the first seminar where we have more laptops on the table than presenters. Very impressive with the technology. It's really a pleasure to have with us Athanasia Hallary and Clive Seeley to present on the topic of contrasting Greek and youth and UK youth subjective responses to austerity. The speaker immediately to my right, Athanasia Hallary, is well known to the Hellenic Observatory. She's principal lecturer in sociology at the University of Northampton, but she's also a research associate of the Hellenic Observatory, but she's also been here a research fellow a few years back. She's worked as a lecturer in sociology at the University of Manchester, postdoctoral research fellow here at the Hellenic Observatory, and senior lecturer in sociology at Worcester University. She has also conducted research at Harvard University as visiting fellow in sociology, and more recently at Toronto University as visiting professor. Her research interests are in obviously sociology, social theory, and modern Greek society. Her co-presenter, Dr. Clive Vasili, is senior lecturer in social policy and theory at the University of Warsaw. His research interests are in issues of poverty, social exclusion, welfare ideology, global welfare issues, and studies and teaches topics in relation to social policy. So the project, I think, is something that has been occupying your work for a number of years now, but I think this is it progressed further and also throws on, as you will tell us, I guess, beyond Greece and in comparison with the UK and lessons for other countries. Mm-hmm. So, Anastasia and Clive, the floor is yours.
So, thank you very much for the invitation. It's always great to be back. So, what we are going to talk to you about today is contrasting Greek and UK youth subjective responses to austerity, lessons for other European countries. So this presentation concentrates on youth, and we're trying to understand what are the similarities and differences between Greek and UK participants. The research rationale for this particular study relates to previous publications which we're concentrating on Greece. This is a qualitative study that explores the ways that the young generation in Greece and UK have been affected by austerity policy and measures. We are referring to the exploration of similarities and differences in young people's subjective experiences and responses that may help to indicate whether there is a tendency of long-term negative effects of austerity across Europe. So the idea was to use data deriving from previous research conducted in Greece related to the Greek crisis and try to compare it with data produced in this particular study related to British austerity.
Okay, so as we know, over the last, it's now nearly 10 years now, Europe has been in a period of what can be defined as austerity. And there have been many kind of like policies that have kind of emphasised this notion of austerity. It's been identified that these, so for example, the graph shows, for example, youth unemployment rate in the UK, and it shows, for example, that Greece, in particular, the youth unemployment rate in Greece is very high in contrast to other countries. And that, for us, that typifies Greece as an exemplar austerity country in which we can kind of like analyse the impact of austerity. According to Bush, the impact of these austerity measures have been quite severe in terms of having an impact on the European social model, in terms of leading to growing unemployment, falling real wages, cuts in social security system, and privatisation of public across the UK as a whole. And we've seen that not just in the UK but also in Greece to greater or lesser extents. And one of the key points about this notion of austerity across Europe is that, as identified by Hamilton and Antonucci, young people across Europe, in many countries, are going to be the first generation for a long time to do worse than their parents. So this notion of social mobility across Europe, which is where younger people do better than their parents, well, this notion of social mobility is being challenged by austerity, because young people across Europe are very likely to do much worse than their parents. And one of the main reasons why this has occurred is because there have been constant cuts in social welfare provision. People have had to depend more on family, and there's been a tendency in both Greece and in particularly in the UK towards greater individualism in policy, whereas away from the social democratic model, away from the Keynesian model, towards greater individualism in terms of policy and policy outcomes. Greece, as I said, has been seen as an exemplar in terms of the austerity and its impact because some of the changes that occurred, which Athanasia will have to talk about.
So let's begin by talking about Greece. I'm sure that most of you already know what I'm going to talk about, just to give like the background situation of Greece. We all ate it together. I'm sure that this rings a bell. It's a phrase that Pangalos a few years back used to explain that actually whatever happened in Greece, we are sort of all responsible for what happened. But let's see what has happened. Now, youth unemployment, as we saw in the previous slide, especially under the age of 25, remains at highest along with Spain at almost 49%, which means one out of two young people in Greece are unemployed. In 2016, the national debt stood at about 185% of the GDP, which is quite outstanding. And capital controls were instituted in June 2015 to limit both the amount of money that Greeks could withdraw and send abroad. Now, during 2015, Greeks had to elect and re-elect the current coalition government. As you know, Greeks love democratic procedures, especially related to elections. And unfortunately, the neo-Nazis party Golden Dawn being elected as the third most powerful party in Greece. And a referendum on austerity took place in July 2015, which received over 60% of the Greek votes against the latest austerity measures, which means that Greeks have a very clear understanding of what austerity is. They have suffered prolonged consequences of this austerity, which actually is not called austerity in Greece, but is called crisis. But what is the impact on Greek young people? Well, young people's lives have changed enormously. Don't get me wrong, everybody's lives have changed enormously. But particularly for young people, things have been slightly different as young people experience unprecedented youth unemployment rates and massive youth migration of waste of qualified and overqualified young people. And this ends up to be one of the most significant elements. So Koniorthos in 2017 tried to estimate how many professionals have left Greece since 2008. And according to his calculations, these people are more or less 107,000 people. Given that Greece is not, the population of Greece is around 10 million people, you can understand that this number is quite high. Now, according to previous research that I have conducted, the young generation has been experiencing, or in different words, suffering from specific feelings related to uncertainty, disappointment, pessimism, insecurity, fear, anger, negativism, pressure, anxiety, and depression. The studies I have conducted in the past indicates that other generations are experiencing similar feelings. However, the young generation experiences in a greater extent the feeling of uncertainty because they feel that they are completely unable to plan their future. And this is the main concept that young people are feeling, and actually they don't know what to do with that. So we had this data. We knew more or less what is going on in Greece, and we wanted to explore whether the data that we have collected from Greece has something in common, or was it radically different compared to what is called austerity in Britain?
Okay, so austerity, as I said, austerity has also been a key feature of UK social policy over the last, well, since 2010. I mean, the cause of austerity was given as public expenditure, increased public expenditure. That was, of course, that was given by the government, or that's been challenged by some. And as a consequence, there was £36 billion worth of public expenditure cuts to the end of 2014, with another £55 billion worth of cuts initially planned between 2015 to 2019. Now, I say initially planned because in the aftermath of the Brexit vote, quite a few people left office, George Osborne being one of them, and the new Chancellor, Philip Hammond, said that it would be austerity light, or lighter austerity than Osborne had planned as if he continued in office. The OBR calculated that total expenditure would be projected to fall to its lowest levels for 80 years by 2018-19. Now, if you think about that, if total expenditure is projected to fall to its lowest for 80 years, that means that public expenditure will be at its lowest levels even during and after World War II. So we're talking the lowest levels except during the period of the Depression era, basically, in the 1930s. So that kind of like signifies the extent of some of the cuts that were planned to be undertaken by when Osborne was Chancellor. Now, as I said, there has been some kind of lightening of that, but it's not going to be much different from that, to be honest. Okay, and in relation to young people, again, similar to the Greek phrase, we all ate this together. Well, in the UK, the key phrase was all in this together, as signified by Cameron, David Cameron in particular. And there have been some key benefit changes for young people. In particular, there's been a removal of some benefits. So the education maintenance allowance, which was a benefit that was paid to young people who went to college, particularly disadvantaged people, but that was removed altogether in some parts of the UK. I think it's still paid in Scotland, but in England particularly it was removed. So that meant that basically it paid you to go to maintain your academic record and attendance at college. Well, that was scrapped. There was also a removal of the entitlement to housing benefit from those aged 18. So this was announced as part of the summer budget 2015, and that will come into place in April this year. So in April 2017, young people between 18 and 20 will no longer be entitled to housing benefit. And also, job seeker allowance was also, the criteria for job seeker allowance was also tightened. So that means that unless you are in apprenticeship or traineeship or doing some kind of additional work, you would not be entitled to job seeker allowance if you're under the age of 20. So you have to be doing something to get job seeker allowance. Also, since the 1st of January 2012, only those aged 25 to 34, were only entitled to the housing benefit shared accommodation rate. So that means that if you are a young person aged 25 to 34, you were not entitled to the rate to enable to live on your own. You were only entitled to the rate that enabled you to live with other people in a shared accommodation. Okay. We've also seen other changes. So for example, the youth services has seen up to 2,000 jobs lost and around 350 youth centres closed. So effectively, youth service has been decimated in the UK. There is no kind of a, like, youth service to speak of, no national youth service to speak of as there was previously. But perhaps the most totemic policy change that occurred in that period was the tripling of higher education tuition fees from £3,000 to up to £9,000 per year. Now, it's interesting that it was set up to £9,000. The limit was set between £6,000 to £9,000. But in reality, nobody charges £6,000, do they? They all charge up at or about £9,000. So that means students were effectively paying for a degree around about £27,000 in tuition fees alone. And this has been compounded this year by the replacement of HE grants with loans. So that means that in the past, whereas you might have had a grant to supplement your income, now it's all loans. So the loan amount that you're entitled to has been increased, but there are no longer grants for students to enable them to attend higher education. Okay. So the consequence of this is that according to research by Blanche Blair, he says that the biggest losers of austerity in the UK are young people, as a consequence of the fact that they can't get jobs, or if they do get jobs, they tend to find temporary, low paid work with fewer hours than they would like. And of course what we've seen as well is the rise of things like the zero-hour contracts during a period of austerity, which kind of doesn't guarantee people what income they can earn or how many hours they have, etc. And that's been something that's been highlighted as problematic for young people in particular. The rise of what's known as the gig economy. There's also been what's known as the underemployment of workers. People are working fewer hours than they would like, which has also disproportionately affected young people, according to Lupton. And also, relearnings have fallen across the board since 2000. So everyone has been worse off. But the key point is that for young people, the falls have been harder and faster than other groups. So young people have been disproportionately affected by falls in real earnings since 2008. And also, the UK has a higher NEET, which is young people not in education, employment and training, than the OECD average. And that's been exactly... Over the past year or two, that the NEET rate has improved, but it's still higher than the OECD average. The consequence of this is that there's been a growth of what's known as the intergenerational gap is increasing in areas as a consequence of policy. So, for example, we've seen policy like a triple lock guarantee, which means for older people, their income, if they're on pensions, their income will rise by either earnings, income, or 2%, whichever is higher. So they're guaranteed that their living standards will rise. Whereas for young people, what's happened is that there's been constant and consistent cuts in benefits for young people, and so there's been a kind of like a older people's living standards have rather maintained or improved, younger people's living standards have fallen disproportionately to older people. And as a consequence of the increase in tuition fees, the estimate of debt from students leaving university has more than doubled from £44,000, which is nearly £20,000 more than before the change. So that means that if you're applying for university now, you're going to be in debt by £20,000 more than you were before the change, which is a huge increase. And as a consequence of this, it's been identified this has led to falls in the likelihood of owning a home, and also increased household debt. Now, to go back to the intergenerational gap, an interesting point is that the Labour Party a couple of months ago said that they would actually maintain that triple lock guarantee on pensions and also on other benefits. So even though it's been identified as problematic for young people, there is no political will or consensus that it will change. It seems that if anything, that kind of like distance between older and young people will be maintained, because politicians effectively seem to be scared to kind of like put policy in place that will affect older people in a negative way, but they don't seem concerned with putting policies in place that will affect young people in a negative way.
So now we have covered more or less a background understanding of what the situation is both in Greece and both in UK, and we're trying to find the most appropriate method to follow in order to try to understand what's going on. So we tried to use, as I said, data that we have already gathered from previous studies. So we tried to compare 36 semi-structured narrative interviews took place in Greece with 20 semi-structured narrative interviews took place in UK. So, methodologically speaking, the way to be able to compare these two different groups of people would be to use more or less the same kind of age groups. So we have interviewed ages between 18 and 25. Most, if not all, participants were coming from a lower or middle class. Both genders were, of course, included. Most participants were students. Some of them were employed. Some others were unemployed. The UK participants were coming from various areas within UK. The same goes for the Greek participants who were coming from different places within Greece. We had to change slightly the questions. However, the number of questions, the structure of questions, the content of questions remained the same. In some cases, some questions had to be changed. So, for example, where we use the term Greek crisis when we were interviewing Greek participants was replaced with the term British austerity. The sampling was opportunistic and convenient sampling, and in some cases gatekeepers were also used. And the analysis followed common themes. The themes emerged out of our analysis, so we haven't pick the themes before we started analyzing the data. So, in terms of findings, we begin with similarities.
Okay, so in terms of, within the research, there were some clear similarities and some clear differences, and we'll talk about similarities first and talk about differences after. So if we talk about the impact on personal circumstances, what we saw from UK participants was they kind of identified a lack of facilities, which was probably expected considering some of the changes that I've outlined, and also think of lack of access to health services, lack of money, having to work more than one job, and rising costs in relation to food, which again perhaps more to do with economic circumstance, and also identified potential unemployment and welfare cuts as problematic in the future.
Compared to the Greek study, similar experiences were reported. However, the participants also reported that they were primarily supported through family rather than the state. So Greek participants did not rely at all on any support offered by the state.
Yeah, so if we go back to that one, sorry. So most of these changes you can talk about, things like having youth health services, youth facilities, these are state services, which in the UK they are in the historic have been primarily offered by the state. So there was a curtailment of this, which is contrast to the Greek circumstances.
Which were not offered anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not much, didn't make much difference.
Yeah.
So the crisis didn't make much difference in terms of that. But yes, we had to report the difference.
And in terms, so this kind of like led on to emotions. So for example, there was feelings of uncertainty, anxiety. In the UK participants about high unemployment rates, concerns about the future. We'll come on to that in a because that was not as high as we thought it would be. And in terms of the prolonged impact of austerity, they talked about feelings of pessimism, disappointment as a direct consequence of that.
Whereas in the Greek study, participants also reported clearly negative projections about the future of Greece and fears about even more difficulties, which means that all participants agreed that there is nothing positive to anticipate. So there's not like a tendency, it was a clear agreement between all participants that there is no positive prospect about anything.
Okay, so here's a quote that kind of like exemplifies, this is from a British participant, which kind of like exemplifies some of the a concern that they had in terms of for the future. They're talking about in terms of they're aware that in terms of their generation was being disadvantaged compared to previous generations. And this goes back to this notion of intergenerational kind of like differences in the impact of austerity, where older generation were seen as having in the past anyway, they would have it easier in terms of finding a job, etc. Whereas the younger generation were kind of like aware that they would find it harder in the future to find a job, for example.
Now the differences.
So one of the key differences was the increased tuition fees in the UK. So as a consequence of the increased tuition fees, participants kind of like highlighted the fact that there was now a need to work, and actually the majority of participants in the UK study did actually work, even though they were studying full time. Some worked in more than one job, or if they didn't work, they had to rely on other family members for financial support.
So that was a concern which was revealed after the increased tuition fees. As you probably know, there are no tuition fees in Greece because higher education is perceived to be free. There are only limited tuition fees in some universities for postgraduate studies. Therefore, Greek participants, students didn't experience any difference in terms of fees.
But despite this impact of tuition fees, one of the most startling findings from the research was the fact that a number of participants were positive about their economic circumstances. And the reason for that was that they said that, as Athanasia highlighted before, many of the participants in the study came from lower to middle middle class families. Now, what they said was that the fact of having had the loan actually improved their economic situation than if they hadn't had the loan. So it the money that was given to them, the increased loan that was given to them, was for them beneficial because it made them feel better than they would have had they not, for example, been studying. So the increased tuition fee was seen as a good thing for them because it improved their economic position and improved their economic circumstance. And as a consequence, they also felt that in terms of where they were, they felt that the UK was in a better position than other countries.
Of course, no such evidence could be provided from the participants because they couldn't feel any better by comparing themselves to another group of students, particularly within the EU.
Okay, so in terms of emotions again, whereas they both did express anxiety, but in terms of the way that they expressed them was different. The UK students did specifically mention this notion of class and how the austerity measures would impact on the class divide within the UK. Now, as we know, class is a prevailing feature in the UK society, so this perhaps is not perhaps a surprise, but it was a surprise that it was specifically picked up as a theme and mentioned by students.
However, we couldn't find anything like that coming from the Greek data, perhaps because Greeks are not generally class conscious. Perhaps because in Greece we are not able to define classes as clearly as we might have been able to do that in UK. And of course it has to do with tradition. So in Greece, social class is not as relevant or as important or as well defined as it is in UK. So no such class consciousness was reported.
Okay, sorry, I think I've jumped ahead of myself with this one, but as I said, because of the students saying they were in a better situation because of the increased tuition fees, and as a consequence, they said they felt lucky. They felt that they were in a lucky situation being a student rather than a lucky situation in terms of not being a student. And as a consequence of that, they felt optimistic for the future, in terms of what the degree would give them.
And of course, no such evidence was reported coming from Greek data. On top of everything, it's not only that there are not fees for public universities, but also I don't think that banks would give any loans to young potential applicants. So Greek young people didn't have such concerns.
So these two different quotes emphasised the position of UK students in terms of debt. It's a play on Callaghan's famous crisis, what crisis quote. So the students were saying debt, what debt effectively. So there they're talking about the fact that, yeah, I've got 21,000, but you know what, it'll pay for itself in the future. It's not really a problem. And the second one is talking about, as I said, I'm very grateful where I am, but then I want everyone else to have, so talking about the fact that they would be better off. And even though a key point was they didn't actually see the increased tuition fees or the maintenance loans as a debt. They didn't perceive it as a debt. They saw it as an investment in their future. So it wasn't seen as problematic to them because well, they would either earn enough to pay it back, which would be problematic, or they wouldn't earn enough, so they wouldn't have to pay back anyway. So for them, it wasn't problematic at all, which was quite significant, because we expected for them to be really, really worried about the debt, but it didn't come through at all.
So, one of the main differences that we thought we had to emphasize has to do with what crisis means and what austerity means. So Greek participants describe their experience as akin to an intense and rapid change of the prominent norms, an almost violent transformation of their everyday life, of their feelings, their concerns, and ability to cope with rapidly changing reality. So their experiences, or at least the way they have explained them, describe a very difficult, prolonged period. They cannot see an edge into that. They don't know when this is going to finish. They have realized that there are clear differences between the lives as they used to live their lives and how they now live their lives and how their lives are going to be in the future. However, UK participants' experiences of austerity, their experiences are challenging and infused with everyday anxieties and tensions, which, however, seemed more like a continuous life struggle rather than a series of unexpected, threatening social, political, and economic transformations. So, of course, it was unpleasant. Of course, it was difficult. But it wasn't as intense. It wasn't as prolonged. So perhaps this is the main difference between what we perceive as crisis and what we perceive as austerity. Austerity is something that we have to go through, but eventually it will work out. Eventually it will be completed. And at some point things will improve, so there is a prospect. However, when we talk about crisis, there's no clear prospect. There's no clear understanding of what is the end of the tunnel, whether there is going to be an end into all of that. And another interesting observation has to do with the comparison between the younger and older generations, because there seems to me to be an issue here, a quite clear issue. So the Greek debt, younger generations are called to repay older generations' debt and the older generations' ways of life. And there seems to be a clear understanding about that. So when we're discussing with young participants, they had a clear understanding that they had to pay back money that the older generation borrowed in order to live the life that they did. So they have a clear understanding that they need to do that. The younger generation will end up receiving lower pensions and even fewer benefits, and they have a very clear understanding that this is going to be the case, and there is not much they can do about that either. Some of them have to leave Greece in hope for a better future. Perhaps slightly older generation after the age of 25 are the ones that massively leave Greece, and the figure of 170,000 people, professionals, that have left Greece is probably people coming from the ages over 25. And many of the this age group are still relying on family. Now, Brexit, that was interesting because younger generation voted to remain, whereas older generation voted to exit. So that was a clear indication that the older generation made a decision about the future of younger generation without taking into account what the younger generation wished. Now, current policies regarding to debt determine the future of younger generation. So apparently older generation decided that students should take loans. So this means that younger generation has to repay these loans. And, of course, not as many people coming from a younger generation rely on family.
So in terms of, just to conclude, one of the key findings from the research was the fact that in terms of UK austerity, we could say that the impact on participants of austerity was mediated to a large degree by the positive impact of increased tuition fees, so they felt better off as a consequence of the increased tuition fees. Now, of course, this is largely dependent on the fact that in the UK we mainly interviewed students, So it would be interesting to see whether or not it was the same in terms of whether we introduced other groups of young people. So that's a clear limitation and a clear direction for perhaps future research. So as a consequence of the tuition fees, that kind of like mediated, it meant that they were not exposed to the consequences of austerity of the youth as the youth, Greek young people are. So they did not feel the full impact of austerity as a consequence of the mediation that occurred from the changes. But what we can say that in the long term, perhaps the impact we felt in the longer term when they actually leave university. And so the tuition fees no longer are mediating their economic circumstances. So they no longer have the tuition fees to fall back on as a way to maintain their living standards. And then there's perhaps the potential for them to experience austerity Greek style, which as we know is not present at all. So what we've seen, for example, for those who are not students, or even those who are leaving higher education as consequence of degree, is things like issues in relation to debt repayment, unemployment, under unemployment, uncertainty, anxiety, fear, and the ability to plan for the future. So, for example, that's when the debt kind of like, well, that means that's kind of like when the debt becomes a bit of reality for them, and it kind of like impacts on their ability to kind of like plan for the future, and that's when perhaps it will become more like Greece than it has been at present.
And therefore, the possibility of continuing to prolong austerity measures and policies in the UK and other countries has the potential to transform into a social, political and economic crisis like Greece, which will leave implications not just for individual countries, but also for the wider European prospect for prosperity, which means that austerity is primarily perceived as an economic issue and has been trying to be resolved as an economic issue. However, the Greek crisis has been perceived as a social issue, political problem, historical phenomenon, which means that it begins as an economic problem and then it expands. And it started getting expanded when fears, anxieties, uncertainties are also involved. So what we're trying to say here is that perhaps British austerity represents the economic stage of the problem, which, if it will not be dealt as it should, has the potential of expanding into a social issue with apparently emotional problems related to that. We are more than happy to...
Just to reinforce that point, so what we can say in terms of the Greece, for young people in Greece, the austerity has been experienced as a macroeconomic problem.
Right.
Whereas for young people in the UK, it's been experienced as a microeconomic problem. And so the key difference is if something's a macroeconomic problem, then it's something that consumes you forever. But as a consequence of it being experienced as a microeconomic problem in the UK, then it's seen as something that's related simply to the individual, not something that's related to the wider economy. So it's seen as something that perhaps is fixable within the individual, rather than something, when it's macro, is seen as uncontainable and uncontrollable. That was a key difference between them.
Thank you very much.
Right, thank you. A lot of material to pick up. I would like to open it for questions and I'll throw in some of my questions.
Sure.
As well.
I'm not an economist or a sociologist, but I think it's the basic methodological question.
Yes.
So how is it possible to compare youth in the UK and Greece? And where in the UK unemployment rate, let's take it from there. Unemployment rate is 5%, youth, just Google it. Youth unemployment is 13%, whereas Greece unemployment official rates are 30%, and youth unemployment is almost 50%. And we're talking about Britain, which is an economic power, a global economic power, to use the Theresa May phrase from this morning's talk. Greece, which has serious systemic issues. I mean, as I told you, I'm not a sociologist or an economist, but in my mind, it just doesn't seem okay to me. I mean, if I were to compare from a sociological perspective, I would compare Greece to some other Eurozone country or member state.
Yeah.
Okay. is a very related question.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To raise from Sarah's point, my first question had also to do with case selection. I mean, it was a very daring study to take Greece and the UK, not only because of the Soviet difference. Also, what I would expect in my mind is to at least make sure you have the same kind of social welfare institutions, because this is where you actually expect to see the biggest type of respect. So, you know, I cannot expect where you start and where I cannot expect to see this kind of difference, because the institutions will be different. That's one. The second one is what you spoke of generalization. I mean, if we take the results from Greece and from Britain, where would we expect to see the same results in other countries?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to take your first question, the key point about them is that in both countries, we can identify young people as being affected by austerity the most. In both countries. So in Greece it's been young people, and in the UK it's also been young people who have been most affected by austerity changes. So even though the economies are different, in terms of the impact of austerity, relatively, in both countries, it's been young people in both those countries that have been most affected by austerity. So, and to link that to your point, the fact that they have different welfare systems, we would perhaps expect them to be lots of differences in terms of outcome, but we did find some similarities. If we found similarities in terms of anxiety, pessimism, kind of like highlight to us the fact that even though they are different welfare systems, austerity is impacting young people in similar ways across different countries within different welfare systems. So you can kind of say that there is a kind of like a consistent impact of austerity, even in countries that are as different from each other as Greece and the UK. That makes sense.
Okay. So I'm not an economist, and this is not a study related to economic parameters. Clearly, okay, but it is a sociological study. And in terms of methodological issues, if you recall the title. Contrasting subjective responses to austerity and the Greek crisis, which means that what we care about is what young people have to say, what they feel, what are their views about a very specific social phenomenon called crisis in Greece, called austerity in UK. Of course, there are two different phenomena, and we don't imply that they are the same, but we were very curious to find out whether young people share some kind of feelings, if they have the same worries, if they have the same anxieties. In fairness, and what Clive said before, is that we thought that actually they would have very different experiences. That was our hypothesis. We cannot use this term because this is not a quantitative, it's a qualitative study. But that was our anticipation. Actually, these were not the results. So our idea was, Greece apparently is one of the worst countries in terms of how much it has suffered of this economic crisis. But Britain has also suffered in different ways, in different forms, for different reasons, following different measures. But we don't care to compare and contrast two countries. We care to compare and contrast how people living in these countries experience the differences or similarities. So that was the purpose of the study. And this is why we didn't consider the structural differences. Of course, there are massive structural differences, but this is not the purpose of this study. That would be the purpose of a different study. What we did care about is what people had to say, not how different these two countries were.
Okay, I'll bring in Bernard, and then we can go back to this.
Oh dear, we're in trouble.
That was the comment.
How people experienced what? So I say, well, who are these people? Now, one of the things which interests me is the myths.
Yeah.
Because you suggest, somebody said that the UK had an above average meat.
OECD.
By OECD.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not quite sure what the meat is. But what I would actually be extremely interested in is the people who are the kind of needs, because unemployment tells us actually very little. Unemployment is a ratio of two things, and actually the denominator of that is the people who are actively who are in the labour market at all. And the problem about the needs and whatever is that there are an awful lot of people who are not in the labour market. So what one might be looking at is people who have somehow not got themselves secured economically, so they're not able to work out, or they're not working. They're doing something different. One of the things you can do which is different under some circumstances is you can disguise your not working by going off and studying. Now, whether that costs you something, what it costs you, is right. But the mere fact that a lot of your, certainly your UK sort of kids to be students, actually means that they would have a available to them and between the inverted commas alternative role, which is a sociologist's expression, which they were actually able to finance through taking on loans, which they weren't at the time because they were still living as students.
Can you try to turn to a question?
I would suggest that what you actually go to do is to look at not students, not in a sort of relatively comfortable part of the south of England, but actually go and look at people in the, say, north of England, where there really is crisis, where there is sustained crisis, and you might have something which is perhaps rather more similar to what you have in perhaps quite a lot of Greece, where these people actually have no prospects, they've been living in a situation with no prospects that even precedes the crisis. And I wonder what those people's views would be like, and whether there is more or less similarity with some of the people in Greece.
I mean, the simple response to that was, of course, these people, as you identified, these people weren't neat, and the neat was actually used as just to identify the status of young people within the UK, just to outline in general what the status in terms of in relation to austerity and kind of like in comparison with Greece. So it wasn't used as a kind of like a, we weren't either looking at neat, for example, because these people weren't neat, as you know. Yes, and we acknowledge. Now, in terms of Worcester, in terms of Worcester University, students who go to Worcester University. Now, Worcester University is an institution that tends to attract lower middle class students, unlike an esteemed place like this, which tends to attract higher income. So, I would say that if we were trying to carry out the study in a place like this, then that would be a fairly valid criticism. But if you look at the demographics and if you look at the socioeconomic profile of students at Worcester, then they do tend to come from lower SES, to use an economic term, SES families, etc. And the third point is, yes, we acknowledge the fact that they are students, and perhaps the next stage is to do a research study where it's not students, where in the north, for example, as you said, where people are affected by have been affected perhaps even more harshly by austerity measures. But so we acknowledge that is a limitation of the study, definitely.
But as we said before, it's not a quantitative, it's a qualitative study, which means that we concentrate on specific groups of people. Now, regarding your point of unemployment, of course you're absolutely right, but no matter what the way is to calculate unemployment, these are the rates for all European countries. So the way that it was, if this is true, this is the case for all European countries. So whatever the measure is, even if it is a bad measure, then this would be a bad indication for all European countries. So this is not a bad measure only used in Greece. It's a measure used in all European countries. I wouldn't disagree with that. But what is helpful is that actually the students that have been interviewed, both in Greece and in UK, many of them were actually working. Many of them were actually parents. Some of them were single parents. So it wasn't, we're not talking about group of students who have the privilege of going to university. Especially in Greece, they had, sorry?
That's the first generation as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you get back to Thai, how do you think that's students?
No, no,
no. That the UK ones seem to be primarily students. I was rather uncertain as to what the Greek ones were, but they didn't appear to be particularly students, the way some of them were.
Well, what the methods, if you see the methods here, students were used. Students were used, but what I'm trying to say, perhaps that is the most important element here. We're not trying to produce generalizations. And generally, qualitative research is not designed to produce generalizations. What we are trying to produce is indication of how younger generation or how our participants were feeling about these particular issues that we have been interviewing them for. So we are not aiming in producing generalization coming from 36 plus 20 qualitative interviews. That's not our target. This is not why we're doing this study. But this study gives indications of what are some of the similarities and differences that perhaps this specific group of people may experience. That was the purpose of the study in the first place.
Take more questions, Kira? No.
Ask a question coming up from the last presentation, so where you said that you're not careful in Britain, you might see a situation where we send to kind of a similar situation in Greece, as we have in Greece. So, what I wanted to ask is if perhaps it would be a good thing to have a bit of sharper distinction of terms. So, in a sense, you use crisis and austerity interchangeably, at least in the beginning of the presentation. Mm-hmm. But I have the impression that crisis is broader than austerity, because the Greek crisis was crisis was perhaps exacerbated by austerity, but it had many other causes as well. Mm-hmm. And then you said there was a referendum about austerity, but I mean the referendum was up about the draft agreement. So I had the impression you seemed to see a lot of things as austerity, whereas in fact sometimes there are distinct terms that could be used, let's say, for the same thing. So, for example, a related question to that, mm-hmm. is that, if you would interview perhaps at the later stage of this project, mm-hmm. this is from a country that has not experienced austerity, but nevertheless has some other similarities to the situation of youths in the UK or Greece. You'd actually find some of the some similar reactions and responses. So, for example, you go to the US, mm-hmm. I'm sure that youths who have student loans under much worse terms than would have experienced the same feeling, so the same pessimism. But nevertheless, it's not the result of the state, it's the result of the structure defining higher education. Yeah. So I just wanted to ask if it would perhaps be worth to have a few more explanatory variables, say, to distinguish them from what exactly is austerity and what exactly is the effect of austerity on the response.
Right. So thank you for saying that. I'm surprised that you using the term variables. This is not a quantitative study, this is a qualitative study. We don't use variables. What we are trying to understand is how people feel. Now, in the questions that we have asked our participants, apparently the context of the questions was related, in the Greek case, to the Greek crisis. And actually what we have asked is, what do you perceive to be Greek crisis? And similarly, we have asked the British participants, what do you perceive to be British austerity? So it wasn't our attempt to define what austerity or crisis is. That was not our attempt. And actually, this is why part of our conclusions has to do with how crisis was perceived and experienced and how austerity was perceived and experienced. This is why we don't use references coming from elsewhere about what is a crisis and what is austerity. So I take your point, I understand what you're saying, but our attempt was to give a background situation of what is happening in Greece, giving perhaps some elements that would explain why what is called crisis justify this kind of description, and what is called austerity justify this kind of description. But we didn't use any specific definitions on purpose, because we wanted these kinds of definitions or explanations to come out of our participants, not from us.
Just to follow on from that as well, you gave the example of America in terms of students there. Now, the key difference between America and the UK is that the changes in the UK, for example, the specific changes related to tuition fees, came as a direct response to austerity measures, were as a specific part of the austerity measures. So, yes, there might be some kind of like, the fact that they may feel the same in America, UK, but the point is they feel the same in the UK as a consequence of changes made during the period of austerity. If that makes sense. Right. Okay. Yes and no, because the Brown report that was published in 2010 was published in 2010. Yes. But. But I'm talking about the actual increase to 9,000. The increase. Yeah, but the question is, would there have been an increase to 9,000 had the austerity not occurred? That's the question, rather than the fact whether the increase started well before that. Tuition fees started well before that. But the actual increase itself, we could argue, was a direct response to austerity.
Is there a question?
Yes, my question.
Alex.
So methodologically speaking, we have used open-ended and structured interviews, which means this research method implies that you ask a question, the person responds, and you make sure that you allow the time and the space to that person to expand as much as possible by explaining in as much detail as possible what his or her views are about this particular topic. Which means that we do not direct specific kinds of desired answers. In which case, we have started both interviews with the question, what you perceive to be pre-crisis, what you perceive to be British austerity. We have some responses, general kind of responses, not specific definitions. But another, I can't remember how many questions followed, designed in a way that would allow further expansion of this particular concept. The interesting thing about the Greek crisis and the British austerity is that almost all Greeks had the same perception. They shared common experiences. And particularly regarding the Greek sample, interviews took place in Thessaloniki, in Athena, Athens, Thessaloniki, Syros Islands, Lesbos Islands, and I can't remember where else. Anyways. So I mean that people coming from different geographical areas shared exactly the same experiences without us asking direct questions. Do you feel distressed? Do you feel anxious? Do you feel this? Do you feel that? They have picked the words. We didn't offer words to pick up from. And similarly, in the British case, we did exactly the same. We set the frame, we set the context, we said, okay, this is what we are going to discuss about. We care to know what you think that the British austerity is. And they started to expand on that. And they shared, some of them shared common feelings, but some others apparently felt in different ways. I don't know if that answers you.
Yes, I was also interested in what their answers were, particularly because from what I understand,
That's a big discussion. I know that we don't have much time to discuss that. The concept of class is very interesting to approach in a Greek context, because what is called class consciousness, as I mentioned before, is something completely different when we talk about the Greek case and the British case. Greeks do not have a clear class consciousness. And when we talk about class in Greece, we refer to something else compared to what we mean when we refer to the British case or even US or other countries. I don't have time to expand, but what I can tell you for sure is that Greek participants did not have a clear understanding of what the class is, perhaps because their parents have moved class during the crisis. They didn't have time to think about that, to realize that, and this is why they were not clear if we belong to upper class, middle class, lower middle class. They didn't use these terms, however the British did.
Now, in relation to the UK, now some of them, in terms of class country, you think that would lead to action, and we did ask, well, why are we not action out? Quite a few of them actually mentioned the fact that the actual response to when the tuition fees were announced, tuition fees increase were announced, there was of course some disturbance around that, and a lot of them mentioned the fact that having observed that, they thought, well, it would make a difference basically if they enacted some kind of class consciousness, some direct class consciousness action, or it was pointless basically for them to kind of like do anything in response. They just accept. So while the class consciousness was evident, the response was, well, it's not, you know, that would make a difference anyway. What we did, because of what happened previously, when people tried to protest against it, they were basically crushed.
I'm going to the conclusion about the different emotions of macro or micro crisis or macroeconomics or microeconomics cause. And I'm wondering how this could be expanded. I don't know how much it's found in the paper and how you show this. And I was wondering, did you do a questionnaire that includes Brexit? You mentioned it there, but I don't know how much you have questions about it. Will this be felt as a macro event that actually causes similar emotions to what the crisis in Greece? Would this be an interesting comparison?
Certainly.
No,
we haven't. But of course, yes. Yeah, the answer is yes. In fairness, anyway, that is my view. Okay, we may agree or disagree, but this is my view that the Greek case, the Greek crisis, at least sociologically speaking, could be and should have been used as an experiment. It wasn't an intended experiment, but it could have been used as an experiment to see how bad something can go. So if European Union or whoever might be interested, even Britain, if they needed to see how bad things could go, they could use the Greek cases. I don't know if they are interested in that. But actually, you can take an issue, which could be called initially austerity, and see how it could actually evolve and expand. What kind of, you know, how big it can become? What are the consequences of that? And I'm not talking about economic consequences. I'm not the person to expand on that. But I'm talking about social consequences. And the social consequences, in many occasions, at least in the Greek case, have not even been anticipated at all. And in some cases, still today, maybe they're not even recognized. So for whatever reason, the issues are primarily economic. Of course they are, no question about that. But they're not only economic. They are something more than that. So what I'm trying to say is that if we take the Greek example, we can see how an economic problem can actually expand into a social big issue, including long parameters of various additional problems. So yes, of course, that is a very good suggestion.
Can I come in with a question as well, partly related to this micro and macro observation, but let me start from you said in the conclusions or in different points in the presentation that there's a commonality in the anxiety and the pessimism that comes from the two sets, you know, places. And in the quotes that you gave, there was no pessimism and anxiety. Mm-hmm. The things that you highlighted was that actually the loan makes me better off than if I was back home, wherever home is. And if anything, I will get a job which is going to be significantly better than the job I would get otherwise. Mm. I mean, this is very difficult to square with the idea of pessimism.
Yeah.
You know, if anything is unjustified optimism.
So the difference difference is that those quotes were from UK.
UK not from the UK. Yes.
So the difference is that
I understand the pessimism in Greece.
Yeah,
so
the difference is that. So but the point is in what you call it is that you wouldn't find those similar quotes from Greek participants. The crisis was total, so it was kind of like, whereas in the UK there was some levels of optimism in terms of the future despite the increased debt and so on. So that was the key difference, that despite what you could have gone through, there was some optimism, whereas in Greece there was no optimism.
Because you did say that, you know, a common trend was the anxiety and pessimism.
Yeah.
There was some between both participants. But
so where was the, you know, in relation to what objective thing was the pessimism expressed in the UK?
No. That's a fair point. Yeah. And I think that we haven't expanded that as much as we should have. So the common description of anxiety relates to the description of what is crisis, how you experience crisis, what this crisis means to you, what you are feeling today, what are the feelings that you are experiencing today. So the common questions asked in British and Greek participants would both include pessimism, anxiety, distress, difficulties. When British started talking about the loans, when they started talking about the fees, we thought that actually they would keep on talking about, you know, being pessimistic, being worried, being whatever, but actually they didn't. So that was the paradox. And this is why we thought that we should clarify that. But yes, I take your point, this should have been better explained.
Okay, just follow up on this. So then can we then say that the pessimism, at least in that area, like the future, so there's a difference whether, you know, going back to the micro, macro, and the universal versus more narrow. So if there's a macro crisis, maybe even Brexit, then you may be more pessimistic about the future. Whereas if it's micro, then your objective conditions, you expect them to improve more.
There's some optimism for the future.
Yeah.
So what the Greek said is that there is no prospect. That's it. Pessimism. Period. Done. What the British said is that we don't like what is happening. Okay, so we don't like austerity, so we are struggling, so we have to work, we have to do this, we have to do that, but this is austerity, and this will eventually be completed, and eventually at some point things will be different. But right here, right now, we are pessimistic because we don't know what is going on, we are unsure, we are depressed, we are worried. But, of course, we didn't ask them to compare what is a crisis and what is austerity, but their description explained what we could get out of it is that, yes, we are pessimistic, but we are not pessimistic forever. Yes, we are worried, but we won't be worried forever, because this is a very difficult time that we have to go through, and eventually we will manage to move away from it.
Yeah.
That is a very interesting point. Tell me how much time I have.
Bernard wants to ask a question, but we have 15 minutes. So
okay.
You have no time now.
Okay, got it. Yes.
But there's a lot of discussion in this country about engaging youths and how it's important to have. And you talked about it as well when you talked about the privilege to the older generation versus the younger generation.
Good education as well.
Yeah, we have to get so forth and so on. So I was actually interested in whether there was, because there was potential, and people talk about, you know, sort of class, not class, but age conflict. And coming back to the Brexit issue in particular, I mean, if it was the case, most of the young people actually didn't vote, because they did vote for the Remain, but most of them didn't vote at all for the Remain proposition. But to what extent is there a feeling there, or did you get the sense of this feeling that, you know, kind of you lot have betrayed our future? Because
right.
Yeah, intergenerational conflicts is being potentially
right. Yes.
The research took place well before Brexit, so there was no chance of measuring any Brexit effect there, unfortunately. I think that's about to understand.
Okay. Right. Okay. So regarding families, yes, Greeks talked about their families a lot. And they, some of them were feeling grateful. Some of them were saying that if it wasn't for my parents or my grandparents, in many occasions, you know, we wouldn't have a place to stay. We wouldn't have been able to, you know, to do whatever it is that we are doing. I have pocket money because of my grandmother. Perhaps my uncle is also helping me, and so on and so forth. And all of that were completely and absolutely acceptable. Natural, you know, part of the discussion, nothing strange there. The interesting thing is that we have started again collecting data from Greece, and again we have revisited some younger participants, and they now start talking about something else. They start talking about their families that, in a way that they imply that they have spoiled them. So they have started being more critical, and they're saying that actually, well, our parents have been able to provide for us. They have been, you know, covering all our needs. We don't have to leave home anytime soon. We are not supposed to have families of our own anytime soon, but that's okay because, you know, we have our own families. We can stay in their places. And some of them have become critical about that. To what extent this is helpful, really? So on the one hand, you can say that they are grateful about the support they receive from their families, but on the other hand, they have started realizing, but actually this is not the most helpful way to move forwards. The intergenerational, yes, you're absolutely right. This is absolutely, yes, spot on. Greeks compared a lot younger generation with previous generations. Sometimes they were feeling angry. Sometimes they were feeling that, you know, why should we pay back money that we didn't even use? You know, people were buying, what's this car that many Greeks were buying? The Cayenne. Yeah. Why do we have to pay back, you know, these kinds of expenses? Some of them were angry. And some of them were feeling, yes, betrayed. But you see, Greek crisis is taking place for quite a long period of time. So they have time to process that, and they have time to come to terms with that. So they take for given that, okay, this is the situation, and now we have to do something about it. And whatever it is that we're going to do will end up meaning that we have to pay this money back. No, now, why this money were, you know, borrowed in the first place, does it matter? The thing is that we have to pay them back. So they have come to terms with that. I'm not saying this is, you know, helpful, but they know that they have to do it one way or the other. They cannot find an alternative. So they have also come to terms with the fact that perhaps they're not going to receive pension. Even if they do, it will be very limited. And they, many of them, considering very seriously of leaving Greece in case they haven't done it already.
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing with that is of course, some of the changes that have occurred over the last 6 or 7 years ago will actually lead to young people relying more on their family than in the past. So, for example, housing, we've seen where young people are more relying more for deposits, accommodation, and so on. Whereas in the past, if you were young people, if you were 18, if you left house, you may have been entitled to council housing, to social housing, etc. Well, if you're 18 and you leave house now, you are effectively bottom of the list in that respect, so you're going to have to rely on your family more than in the past. Mm-hmm. And higher education is also a very good example of where there's going to be perhaps more reliance on the family than in the past, because of the loan, whereas in the past you may have got a grant that was sufficient for you to survive on, and you would also be entitled to sign on and all that kind of stuff. I don't know whether you signed on yourself or not. Now there's an implicit, within the loan system, there's an implicit, not only is it means tested, but there's an implicit feature of parental contribution that's not stated explicitly, but it's kind of like implicit that if you have a loan, then your parents will somehow top up that contribution to enable you to kind of like exist throughout university. So, okay.
Okay, we have another question that I want us to move on. Yeah.
Thank you for the question. It's a really good one. Actually, this relates to the previous studies I have done around this one. The answer is, actually, there was a specific question in the interviews asking young participants, do you feel that you have contributed? And the answer, the initial answer is pause. They think about it for a while, and then they say, yes, we have. And when I say, how? Why? They say because we did nothing to prevent it. Because when our parents try to help us, we receive their help. When our parents ask for a favor from a politician, we took it. When our parents, helped us to get into the university by, I don't know, whatever way, they accepted it. So when I say that, okay, so now you feel that you have contributed up to that extent. So what are you going to do? Is there anything you can do about that? They said, yes, there is. We should change mentalities. And I said, okay, what does this mean? What are you going to do? And they said, we have to do things differently. And when I said how, they said, well, we should stop this kind of established mentalities. This is the sociological interpretation. They didn't use these words. And they said that we shouldn't rely on who we know. We should start. That's not the point. The point is that they have realized what the problem is, and when they have been able to realize that these kinds of mentalities have been harmful, and they have been able to identify that, whether they are going to do something about that or not is up to them.
I believe that they are becoming more intelligent.
In what way?
So a derived question from the previous question is whether the solutions, and perhaps then comparatively also in the UK and in Greece, are sought through individual action or more political action. So you expect collective improvement versus individual improvement.
Actually, we had a section, a part in our study, in both studies, Greek and UK, about resistance. So we asked our participants, have you resisted? Have you planned to resist? How are you resisting? And that it was very interesting, actually. The findings were very interesting because, generally speaking, the British participants were more passive. So they could talk about, for example, the London riots. They could say that we would have liked to join London riots, but we didn't because we had something else to do, because we didn't have money to travel to London. But
or we were scared of what?
Or we were scared of potential violence used, or because of the media describing what was happening as potentially violent. What we gathered is that they were aware that they could have done something on a collective level, but they didn't, for whatever reason. In the Greek case, some of them said, well, yes, actually we have gone to see them as well, and we have joined some of the activities taking place, but actually nothing ever happened, so there's no point of joining. So they have lost hope in a collective kind of response or reaction. So they were, in both cases, I think they prioritized their individualistic kind of response of whatever that could mean for different people.
Okay, so that's it. Final question.
Okay. I'm sorry, if we...
Surprised, I'm surprised. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Nothing new to me. So, I would like to know more about
So from a British perspective, we expect the students to be more negative about the increased tuition fee. We expect them to say, oh, this is really bad, it's going to cost us, really going to cost... No, they were like, well, you know what? It's put me in a good position economically. You know, it's not a bad thing. And you know what? I'm not so worried about it because, you know, I'll either get a job that will enable them to pay off, which is perhaps not, because as with our social mobility in the UK is falling, so the chances of that happening are not as high as they were in the past. Or, you know, if I get a job below 21,000, I won't have to pay it off anyway. So they were almost blasé about the 21, about the increased loans, which was really, really surprising. We thought they'd be more angry about it than anything. So that was a major finding for us.
Yeah. Well, as far as the Greek side is concerned, I'm going back to the point I made before, that they displayed a clear understanding of their contribution of what went wrong. And this is against the main Greek mentality, that's not my fault. It's whoever else's fault, but not my fault. They were not blaming the others as much as they were realizing that they had played a role in that, and if they want to change something, they had to do something about it. So they realize that it is up to them if something is going to happen. Having said that, it doesn't mean that they have a specific plan. They don't. This is a general lack of plan about the future. In my view as a sociologist, I think that it is a very positive indication that they have a good understanding of what went wrong. Because when I interviewed older generations, 30 to 40 and 40 to 55, the responses were different. It wasn't their fault. It was the Americans' fault, the EU fault, the you name it fault. But it wasn't their fault. You know, they were the victims. They perceived themselves as being the victims. Whereas the younger generation didn't express this kind of feeling. They felt that they had to repay something that they didn't borrow. But actually, they felt that if changing mentalities, and they said about their children, the way that they want to raise their children, that was very interesting to me. That was something new to me, that they want to raise their children in a different way compared to the ways that their families raised them.
They're still blaming their parents. That mentality of their parents.
Perhaps, but this is an indication of critical.
With encouragement.
Fine. I'm sorry, I'm a sociologist, I can't follow human nature, I'm sorry. Perhaps.
So maybe the young people are more optimistic than you are.
Okay, I'm afraid we have to stop here. Please join me in thanking again the speakers. And before you go, can I make the announcement, the typical announcement? We reconvene in 2 weeks' time, Tuesday, 31st of January, if you have nothing better to do. We're talking about more politics, the Golden Dawn, and the impact of the Golden Dawn on Greek party politics, by Kyriaki Nano from Nottingham, Daphne Halikiopoulou from Reading, and Sofia Vassilopoulou from York University.